With that, I will remember to turn the recording on and call the meeting to order. And let me introduce Mr. Matt Kranz. He's taken Mr. Endres's place. So thank you for joining the committee. So, and we appointed him at a recent county commission meeting a couple weeks ago. And so, thank you. So, with that, I will entertain a motion to...
make a motion to approve the agenda.
So we have a motion from Mr. Van Dusen to approve the agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
Second from Ms. Olson. So all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Okay, agenda is approved. And then I need to hand it over. This is February, so we need to appoint officers, so...
need a motion or a
oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay, yeah, you should have. I'm sorry. Okay, so your motion is to approve the minutes as emailed from Mr. Wasland. Is there a second? Second from Mr. Koisten. Any discussion on the minutes? Okay, so the minutes, typically, they're a few pages, and then there's all those attachments. I think that was in your packet there, Mr. Kranz. So all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Okay, so the minutes are approved, and I need to hand it over to our current secretary, Julie, for the election of officers, at least the election of the chair, and then the chair gets to do the role.
Hey, the floor is open for nominations for chairman.
I would nominate Commissioner Gable to fill that chair position.
Is there a second to that?
You don't have the second nomination. You can see who else, if there's other nominations.
Any other nominations? Somebody like to close nominations?
So then the motion would be to cast a unanimous ballot.
Cast a unanimous ballot for Chairman Gable to be reelected.
So you have to, somebody needs to make that motion. Okay. I guess I can. It's a little tacky if I do it, so.
I'll make that motion.
Okay. All right. And then you need a second.
Second.
Yeah. Second. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay.
All right, Chairman Gable, I will hand it back to you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Now we need to do the vice chair. So, are there nominations for the vice chair? I can make a nomination. I would nominate Ms. Olson.
I didn't make eye contact.
are there any other nominations? Perhaps there would be a motion to cast a unanimous ballot that nomination cease when cast a unanimous ballot. Would there be a
motion?
Yes.
I'll make it.
So a motion for Mr. Koisten. Is there a second to that?
Second.
So second. So all in favor of Ms. Olson serving as vice chair, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Congratulations, Megan.
Thank
once
you.
Again,
again.
Okay, and then nominations for secretary. Are there any nominations for secretary? And by the way, they don't have to be a formal voting member of CCJC, as you know.
You'll do it again. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
nominator and cast the unanimous ballot.
Okay, so we have a nomination for Julie Radak. We need to just make sure there's no other nominations, and then any other nominations for secretary? Okay.
Other nominations are welcome, just so you know.
Okay. You're doing so. So, not hearing any other nominations, is there a motion to cast to stop the nomination cease and we cast a unanimous ballot? Okay. So, motion by Mr. Wasland, the nomination cease and we cast a unanimous ballot. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second.
So, second from Ms. Olson. So, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Okay, so congratulations, Julie, you're elected. And thank you very much, because that is not a, just so you know, this is a bit of work. So she has to sit here and take notes copiously, and then she takes very thorough notes that it's very easy to come up, I mean, she drafts up the minutes, I take a look at them, and it's a pretty quick process. And so thanks to her hard work on that. So thank you very much. Okay, moving right along, I'm going to call... Bruce Schwartzman, our architect, and he's just going to give us a quick update on the remodel. And hopefully this will work.
Hello?
Hey, Bruce, can you hear me?
Yes, can hear you well.
Okay. Yeah, he's your disembodied voice in the room, so that's you're coming out of the speaker on the projector. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I always look better that way.
Okay. Okay, so what you, on the slide right now we have the ground floor design plan. So it should be in your slides. It's one of the first. It's probably the first slide in your handout. So, and if you get, if you want to take it from there, then we then after that I have those perspectives you sent, and then the timeline.
Yeah. So good evening, everybody. We recently had a meeting a couple weeks ago where we met with the judges, and I'm trying to think. I think. We met with Lee and a few other folks as well.
The clerk
went through the plans. I'm getting some buy and revive.
Okay, yeah, it was the Third Circuit Court Administrator and the Clerk of Courts were there as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so we finished up the plans, the planning, layout of the plans. And the objective is to make sure that the layouts of the plans are correct and they work for everybody and everybody understands them, and we've gone through that planning. So what we moved into in the last meeting was some of the mechanical electric coordination as well, and we also showed some floor finishes, material, room and finished materials as well, and got direction on that. So we have another meeting coming up in, I believe it's February 20th, which we're going to some quartz technology finish. I think we looked at some sight lines, and that's kind of what you see in the courtroom, some of the sight line studies. And that's to make sure that from wherever, whatever points in the judge's bench, the jury deliberate, or the jury's box, and some of these other spots, witness, and so on and so forth, you have good sight lines, and everybody can see what needs happening within the courtroom. Sorry, it's really difficult to talk because I keep hearing my reverberation of what I'm saying.
You sound fine. But, yeah, you sound fine on our end, but I know.
Okay, good, it can be good. So I think all in all, things have gone well. We did add one item that was requested that looks at trying to add security to the building. And what it does is it adds a scanner and some glass wall areas down in the lower lobby so that people are directed down and then they have to go through screening in order to get into the building. And we're gonna finish drawing that and bidding that as an alternate. So if the numbers come in well, the county could decide to go ahead and do that as part of the overall project as well.
Yeah, and just so, I can interject, Bruce, on the,
yep.
So that's something that we as an advisory committee already recommended for the commissioners to do if the costs allow within the project.
Yep. And then in the clerk of courts area, there were some minor modifications. I think we've got that laid out well. There was the last discussion was, county's office was being planned in the one corner, but through discussions it was decided to kind of put her in another area to keep the break room rather down, and that actually will save a little bit of money. Leaving some existing conditions.
Yeah, if I can interject, Bruce, I'll explain it on the plan. So on this plan,
yep.
So this is the clerk of court's office. In this plan, this is going to, if we put her here, we don't have to demolish as many walls, so it'll be a cost saving. She gets a little bit bigger office, but we don't have to demolish as many walls. And then this was going to be the break room, so basically it's a switch around. So that was a cost saving thing that actually the clerk of courts herself offered to do that, so that can save a bit of money.
So after the next meeting, as far as timeline, we're going to finish up documents. We'll send the final documents off to all of you, to Lee and the committee and whatnot, to take a look at it and have any final comments. And then in March, I think it was right around mid-March, the project would go out to bid.
Okay, so that's right in here. Yeah. Yeah, you have March 13th. And then so the next meeting, just to recap, is a week from today, so February 20th. So, and that's the next worker bee meeting. And if anybody on the committee is interested in coming to see what that's like, it's basically people looking, sitting around a bunch of plans, but it is kind of interesting if you want to see what
that's like. Where is that meeting going to be held?
We'll do it in the courthouse somewhere. It's probably going to be either in the equalization office or maybe the emergency management conference area. So it's a little hard to work in the commission chamber. So
the plan layouts have all been worked out and they've been finalized, and now really this next meeting there might be a few minor follow-ups, but it's primarily the court's technology discussion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions? Anybody have any questions for Bruce? So good. Okay. All right. Do you folks have any questions? Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Bruce. Thank you for joining us for a bit, and we'll be in contact about the final coordination for next week.
Excellent. Okay. And if there's any other questions on this, they can come me a call. I'll drive in for the next hour or so.
Okay.
Glad to answer any questions.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Have a good evening.
You too. Thank you.
Hey, Wayne.
Yep.
I did have a couple of questions, not necessarily a Bruce needed to answer them. Mm-hmm. When you come in the south door of the courthouse, I'm assuming, you can go to the left or you can go to the right into those offices or what? Or
yeah, let me show that. Where did I put that hidden slide here? Okay. Yeah, so the way it would work is, so the idea was to try to come up with a security checkpoint
right.
where you could continue to use both entrances, both the north and the south entrances. Right. So essentially, either way you come in, so if you came in from the south parking lot, that's the handicapped entrance, we go that way and then through the metal detector or whatever, it might be a wand, hopefully we can use a metal detector, but and then if you're coming from the front door, this way, we have to create a little partition here and here, so you can't go right up into the courthouse, but you have to go through here. There's a little flight of stairs, if you remember, then through there.
Okay.
The only areas you don't have to go to through the security point would be to get to the state's attorney and to the clerk of courts, but there's ballistic glass in those places. So that's, and it's
and
just...
And you wouldn't have to go through it to go upstairs.
You would. And
you
we
go
could.
To the register of deeds.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the idea. Because the problem is that you have courtrooms on the second floor. That's the problem. Yeah. So you have to. So that you go through. Once you go through the detector, then you go back up into the court, mm-hmm. into the courthouse. And then here's the elevator.
The detector closer to the door?
Well, if you want to be able to use both. This was the layout. If you want to be able to use both entrances, so we're trying to avoid having to close off one entrance. That's, and you know,
you
that's the challenge.
Parking them both front and north and south.
Yeah.
Straight below that red arrow, you have two doors swinging in.
Which one? Here?
Down.
This one?
That one. Straight below it, you have two doors.
Yeah, you would have,
On the side.
Yeah, I'm not sure why I don't know if you have to have those doors there.
No, I mean, just...
Here? Oh, here?
Yeah.
Okay, this is currently the veterans' assistance.
And they're going to be
They'd have to be locked, yeah. Yeah, you'd have to make them fobbed. Like, so this could be the clerk of courts that they want to have a work entry that way. But there's now a fob system in the courthouse recently installed. So, in other words, you have an electronic key fob.
That other room off to the left there, Al, I think, and Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that an attorney?
That's going to be attorney client. Yeah. And so what's going to happen here, you can't see it on this. This is a little bit older version of this floor. So you see the courtroom looks a little different in this one. This is an older version, but the security part's the same. Just they would take out a section of this wall, so it's just an open area going into kind of a lobby area. Then you'll have an attorney client place here and then over here. So the shape might be a little different. So you have two attorney-client conference rooms.
How do they get into those attorney-client?
They go through the court. They have to go through security, and then they're in there. Then this will be removed. There'll be a little bit of a passage removed there.
Oh, and that's where they'll get in.
Yeah, so this actually, here, it's kind of to the left of where I'm pointing there. See where that fire extinguisher is? Just to the left.
Okay.
So there's you can just remove a section of wall. So it'd be kind of an opening into a little lobby. And that way, whoever managing the security checkpoint can... can see in there too. That's the idea.
Okay.
So.
Same thing with going down the basement.
Yeah, I think we'd have to fob that. Yeah. You know. Yeah. That's usually locked. I mean, right now. So. But.
So that would control access to the elevator and everything.
Yeah, then. Yeah. And, that, you know, there's challenges with this older building because, obviously, you know, the elevator is small, the shaft is small. So I think it's just tough to work through without sticking an elevator shaft to the side of the building. So, you know, if you want to fit a hospital gurney in there or something like that. But, you know, so. And now, I don't know if... One thing for folks that might not be familiar with it, let me go back a bit. That's kind of one of the tricky parts of this, the whole thing that the architect's having, it's the puzzle for the architect in this area, is this is at a higher level. All this is at a higher level because this is the same level as that this entry foyer mm-hmm. where the welfare office is. So it's a bit of a puzzle, and then they have to create a little staircase here for the judge to get out, and also as an alternative, you know, egress route to get out of the building if you had to in an emergency. So there's those kind of tricky things to work out. And go ahead.
Where's the judge's chamber? Right in the left upper.
Right here.
Left.
So they don't get the benefit.
Desk or whatever.
His bench is here. Right here. Yeah. Okay. So one of the things we had to, you know, it's not a critical showstopper, but he doesn't get his own bathroom, so he has to. He'll have to use. Yeah, it's nice if you can do that for the judge, but you know, but he'll have to use the one in the chamber, jury, not the chamber, but the jury deliberation area. So it's not, you know, it's not perfect, but you know,
it's workable.
Yeah, and it's a lot less expensive. The other, just to show you, Bruce didn't know I had this slide. This is a zoom. This is a little easier to see than this one, but I thought this was kind of cool because they do all these studies. One of the nice things about technology. You can map all this out on a computer and see, you know, make sure all the sight lines look good for a courtroom. And that's kind of the people don't actually dress like Spider-Man, but...
What is the spectator area? How many spectators can we
have? About 100. So, and we had a discussion about... This is interesting. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this, we had a discussion about the possibility of kind of... Rooming off, you know, walling off a little section here for either an inmate holding room or another attorney client space, but it was too much of a bite into the spectator area.
Cut a lot of space out.
Yeah, so it cut out almost 40, you know, 35, 40 seats.
How many people can the other courtroom hold?
60
right
or 70?
I was going to say 80-ish, maybe.
If crowd, I mean, that's a cram. I mean, when you see them doing a jury call with 100 potential jurors, they're in folding chairs and they all look miserable. So, you've done that, you know. So it's not fun. So this should be able to, in most cases, this should seat adequate potential jurors. So then it's a matter of the court system scheduling the room, you know, when they have to do that. And also, if you have a lot of magistrate cases, this would be easier to do too, I would think. So, let's see, what else can I tell you? I'll explain that, and then. Just the perspectives I thought were kind of cool. So that's what it would look like from the audience, from the spectator area. So you can see it's a nice big room, but so you have to wall that off for the judge's chamber and that stairway going up, mm-hmm. right? So then the jury deliberation area is up above here, okay? And then from the bench, it looks like that. So I don't know if you walk back there in the equalization office now, you don't see these back windows. These south windows, because there's a closet there right now.
Isn't that where Milo's office?
Milo's office is back in here, okay. And then there's a storage room for files for the state's attorney, but they've already pretty much emptied that out.
Is that jury room on the same level, or is that?
The jury room's going to be higher. So the jury room's kind of be about the same elevation as the welfare office.
So is that going to be handicap accessible too, or is that?
We're going to have to work out a little lift or something on that stairway. We'll have to work out something on that little stairway. The only tricky spot is this spot right here. So you could get in handicapped accessible from the back, and then that spot there might need a little lift. So, or you could potentially do it this way. You could go in, and then there's a lift here, go in through the courtroom, and then there's going to have to be a lift here. So that would be the way to solve that too. So that's probably the easier way. So, and then this will be a ramp. And if you're wondering, these little circles here, those are wheelchair turning radiuses. So that you have to be like in the toilet there, here. So those are things that by code now, yeah, we have to plan for. So.
Sir? You wouldn't really need a lift on the stair if you're going upstairs because they have the access to the elevator.
I was going to say, we don't have that now.
Yeah, the problem is the elevator only goes, you still have this little stairway to get up to that, just that little, it's, you know, a short little stairway.
Is it like four steps or something like that?
Yeah.
What are they going to go up there for?
Well, to get to the jury suite. So if they...
It's on the same floor.
It's for a juror to get into the jury. The issue is it... So I think we'll be okay without that because this, you know, it'll be a little complicated, but, you know, that's a problem with an old building, so... But it's a beautiful building, so it's nice to be able to continue to use it. Okay, and the timeline, Bruce covered the timeline, so I don't want to belabor this too much. Keep it moving. You also, the next thing on the agenda, any other questions about the remodel right now? So contact me if you have a question, and then if I can't answer it, I can probably talk to Bruce or one of the UGS folks. The inmate population projections. So you know, back in 2015, Bill Garnos did our inmate projections. He has updated with the data since 2015. So you can see on this slide, the light gray, what his initial study went up to that, where the light gray is, and then the dark gray. He's added those numbers just to the simple projection. He's done that for free, no additional cost, which is very, very kind of him. The interesting thing, though, you can see these annual average daily populations increasing, particularly with the last spike we had. And so these are just a couple cut and paste from the document. So I emailed you guys the link or mailed you in paper to the report. But and the whole report's on the CCJAC website, so I think you guys have been through it probably many times, but essentially, with taking all these into account, you can see this is this section is the update, and so he's accounting for this nice spike that we had over the past year. So that's just the plan. That's just the historical data, okay. And now, this is the out-of-county, we get a lot of county, this is interesting because we get a lot of questions about out-of-county inmates. But if you notice, typically it's about 10%, you know, maybe a little bit less than 10% for out-of-county inmates. But because of our increased number of inmates from Cottington County, that you can see this out-of-county number went way down. And that's what this other arrow is. That shows that the out-of-county inmate population is going down.
So that's just because we don't have room to house.
Yeah, so this kind of shows that when we have the space, we help out the other counties. When we don't, we can't. So that's basically.
You can see in the loss of funds that we lost
this year. In the Elder County, the fees that we collected for the bed fees. That's true, yeah. And let's see. So going, turning that historical data into a projection, what Bill did was it sent up the. So this is looking into 2025, less than 10 years out. So, and the average, and he's what he's doing, there's a number of different mathematical things that he does, and he basically averages them all in this thing called the midpoint average, and that comes up, he comes up with 100, and just plotting it out on a graph. Now, one thing that's different here is this model here, I had to ask him about this, but this model 1C is based upon just simple population growth in the county. Okay, but over time we've seen that this line's at a much steeper slant than that line. So he thought it would be most realistic to not average that in. So, and I didn't quite, that was not a happy, he just thought he was just trying to be helpful. He thought that was the right thing to do. So just, if you recall, I just wanted to compare this to, June 2017, when he left that 1C model in the average. So you can see 2025 was somewhat lower, and you still had all these high numbers. So this was, we still had that high peak in June. So that's about like right in there. Okay. So if you remember, basically every 6 months, Bill is doing this for us. So this was 6 months ago. And so, so you can see the difference. There's a nine inmate difference. That's kind of significant for a less than 10-year time frame. But that's because, for the most part, in June, he thought it was still, reasonable to include that as part of the average, that just solely based on population growth. And this time, he didn't think we should do that. So that made the midpoint average higher. And so this is, and if you read the back page of the report, he's saying that, if we need to do something, basically. But this would be his recommendation for beds right now, which is kind of not what we wanted to see. So, but anyway, that's what we see right now. But keep in mind that this was a spike. The last thing that happened was the highest spike we've ever had. So hopefully what we'd like to see is that average kind of goes down to the original projection that he had, which kind of aimed us at the 120 bed jail, which was a much more modest number. So we don't, and which kind of leads, that's basically it for the update on Bill's projections. So, which means that we constantly as a county have to be working on incarceration alternatives, which I wanted to go over next. It's kind of an FYI thing, but any questions on this update? And this is just purely statistical. This is based on, so I don't even though you see that, this is working out a purely mathematical formula. We have to inject our own needs and resource constraints and all those things as we debate, as we continue to debate the issue. So that's an important thing. So it's not, no, I'm not trying to cause alarm or anything like that, but this was basically the last graph in Bill's update. Any questions on this?
Kind of wonder if the jailing that we do now, is that going to change? In other words, we're putting a lot of people in jail, and is that actually where they need to be?
Is that where they belong?
We're going to talk about that next. That's a good transition to the next topic.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's talk. That's a good transition. So, and that's why I wanted to cover that, because I wanted to make you all aware of some of the incarceration alternatives. So I think it's a good. Any other questions? Because I think Matt's question kind of led to this next topic.
I have one question.
Yes, ma'am.
On that last chart, when it had the numbers, was that considering any alternatives being used, or
that's just a mathematical taken. So one thing, keep in mind that this was an exceptionally high spike we had. Right, and so hopefully it won't stay that way. And so as he does more updates, that'll go back down. I mean, that's what we want to see. So in the meantime, there's always going to be something. There's always something that we have to work on. So he's just looking at the math on this one. Okay, so we got on a topic the last meeting. We kind of started talking a little bit about the need for alternatives, and so I thought it would be good for this committee, if anybody, to be aware of the programs that are in the works or either going on. And so I'm hoping that you don't mind chiming in, Brad, as we go through some of these, because you're probably going to be as much of an expert on a lot of this stuff. So just going to hit on these briefly, and then I think we'll be, this is probably the most lengthy thing. So one program that's been going on for a while, since 2006, is the 24/7 program. Pretty successful. It has been, I think, it's been critical to keeping the jail population under control. Basically this allows us to focus in, I think, the incarceration on felons. You can take a look at what that says there. But, over consistently, at least 100 people are on the 24/7 program, and what that is basically drug and alcohol testing. So the people who breathalyze have to come in twice a day,
yeah.
And the urinalysis guys who meet twice a week, and then there's some other sweat patches and other things that occasionally judges will use to where people can sweat the chemicals from the drugs, and then there's a scram bracelet as well, so used a little less often, but it's been over time, as far as per test, it's less than 1% failure rate on the tests. I think I read a statistic on the Attorney General's website that 55% of these folks never fail. So that's pretty good, actually. So, and just to give you an idea of what, and this also does not include the guys that are in the Department of Corrections. Like, so the probation officers are also using a similar program with people on probation as well. So, and it's because of the facilities, though, they're and personnel issues, it's hard for you guys to help them out because of the 100+ people that are on this program.
We've been averaging about 50 urine analysis a week on that program.
And then how many breathalyzers a day? You must have, like, who knows how many.
100, yeah. 120, I suppose.
Yeah. So this keeps the jail a busy place.
And the PD.
So you do them on this program at the PD?
Yeah. Okay. The males. The males come in, the females go to the male general.
Part of the drug court program.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's with the CSOs. That's the bottom part there. Is where the, yeah. So that's separate from that statistic anyway. Similar program, though. And this I thought was interesting. Way back when I was looking at these rates of increase, but this is a graph you've seen. It's just looks a little different because the tops of the peaks are flat. But this is our jail average ADP, just pretty much the same as what Bill had in his report. But you can see where 24/7 was implemented in about 2006, and then look at how the rate of increase changed between. So you had it going steadily up, and then it flattened out a bit, and now we're in the middle of this thing here, whatever, which is.
Senate Bill 70,
but also in part, and also meth. You want to say? I mean, what you guys would know?
Senate Bill 70.
Yeah. Okay. So, and Senate Bill 70 came in. What session was that? 2013, or was that 20? I think it was 2013. 14. Okay. But anyway, so that gives you an idea of the impact of that program, and that's going on now. And Thank goodness for this program. And that gives you an idea. This is just the last 12 months. So this is from, I just pulled this right out of the sheriff's report. And so you can see the dark lines are who's in, that's the average for the month of who's incarcerated. So in jail, and right next to it, those are the people on the 24/7 program. So you can see where the lowest month was on this year was 101. And that's just the average over the course of the month, right? So you get an idea how important that is. And then the rest of the programs are kind of in the works. So the next one I wanted to hit on. Any questions on the 24/7, by the way? And I hope this is starting to answer your question a bit. Yeah. Behavioral Health and Justice Working Group, but also known as the Stepping Up Initiative, but it's aimed at reducing mental illness, the presence of mental illness in the jail. And the idea is to find those non-jail alternatives for the people that really shouldn't be in there, because what's happened in our country is jails have become the primary mental health institution throughout the country, not just in Cottonwood County. And so Cottonwood County was the first county to join the Stepping Up Initiative, which was started by the National Association of Counties, and that was the initiative of our welfare director, Sarah Peterson. She had the idea, and so we're the first county in the state to do it. I think Minnehaha is the only other one right now. There might be a few, one or two others, we started a working group. We just formalized it into the Behavioral Health and Justice Working Group to help us get a better handle on some of the stuff because of the challenges at the bottom. It is a really complicated problem, so the data is very hard to get a grasp on because it's, as a layman, it seems to me that there's just so many variations in the mental health picture. That it's tough to track. So, but I think we're making slow progress on that. A couple of highlights in the progress. One thing we do have a part-time mental health professional in the jail, which really helps with the jail management. So that guy works 20 hours a week and provided by HSA. That's done through a contract with the Human Services Agency. We're just trying to pilot a behavioral health deflection program. So this is meant to be an opportunity for law enforcement to if they see an issue where it's, you know, you'd rather not take the, as I understand it, you'd rather not take the person to jail because they really haven't done anything wrong, or, you know, it's something you don't need to cite somebody for, but maybe let a, and we have a person that's, this person is provided through a contract with LSS, Lutheran Social Services, to contact folks.
To help find them people before they end up in our facility.
Right, yeah. So it's
a treatment,
yeah.
Also deals with repeat.
Yeah.
Clients as well.
Yeah, hence the name deflection. So you're trying to deflect him away from the jail in the first place. So that's something that's in its. We just went over 6 months on it. So, but it's another tricky program. This is all very tricky stuff. And then the last thing was we got a SIM, and SIM stands for strategic intercept mapping, and that's basically the process by which a person goes through the criminal justice system from arrest through the whole thing. And to find those points where somebody where you can, you know, assess somebody with mental illness and find them someplace else other than the justice system to be, particularly other than jail to be, and the whole idea is to get these community alternatives to kind of work out a better system to do that. One of the nice things is that first sub bullet right there. In the process of doing this workshop, and this was done for free, so this is again with Sarah Peterson's initiative. We applied for this grant, we got it. So we had two consultants come in and walk us through this process, and we discovered a point where there was a way to get information to a judge more quickly, so that they can make possibly divert somebody from the jail earlier in the process. So, work in progress, very, very tricky, and we'll see. It's hard to say, you know, how much impact that's going to have on the jail population, but it's definitely the right thing to do. Time will tell. Your Honor. Okay. And then the next one, any questions on the mental health stuff? This holds potential to really help some things with the jail problem, but it is a tricky one. And not really it's a separate working group that's working it, but we want you guys to be aware. Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative. This is an initiative from the state, and please chime in, gentlemen, and who know better than this. I'm a layman talking about this. We don't have as I think most of you know, we don't have a big juvenile detention problem in the county. So our juvenile population in our jail is usually not very significant. It's usually not a big issue. But statewide, it is, and so the court system has basically required counties to avoid incarcerating a juvenile if at all possible. And they have that RAI stands for Risk Assessment Instrument, and essentially what that is you ask of the situation a series of questions, and it basically the way it turns out is that if the crime has to be pretty serious, involve a firearm, or be a very high level of felony before you would incarcerate a juvenile. That's basically the issue, because the idea is that juvenile incarceration can be very harmful. The state provides a consultant to do that, to help the counties through that. So there's probably about 10 counties involved with this right now throughout the state. So, and we're one of them. And we formed a committee at the end of the year. So that involves the school system. So Commissioner Van Dusen and I sit on that one. Judge Means is also on that one, DOC, said school, HSA is involved. So a number of people, Boys and Girls Club. So again, it's a little bit similar to the mental health effort in finding community solutions where we can give law enforcement and the criminal justice system some place to direct a juvenile offender as opposed to jail. The challenges, you know, we're just beginning. The state consultant just took another job with the drug court system, and so they need to hire somebody else. So we're a little slow, but it's not a critical problem. It's not the juvenile incarceration problem is not huge. What's nice about this program, though, is that if you can do it right, then hopefully we prevent juvenile offenders from becoming adult offenders, and so that's a more of a long-term way to reduce jail population or at least control it. So,
And there's key players involved in this. That's what's nice about this committee is it's really a conglomeration of community people that you need to have on this committee.
Yeah.
The school district, mental health, judicial system.
Yeah.
Law enforcement. So.
Yeah. So yeah, it's in some ways the cast of characters is a little bit similar to the mental health one, but this one has the school and the Boys and Girls Club, and it will probably add other agencies as time goes by. And then the last one I was going to talk about was the specialty courts, particularly drug court. I didn't have a slide for vet court, but this is more of a long, in terms of the jail, is more of a long-term thing, and it's a result of SB 70, so the, otherwise known as the Public Safety Improvement Act. And correct me if any of the verbs are wrong there, but this is basically an alternative to prison, not to jail. That's the way it's designed. So it's so if you have a drug felon, you know, they basically have a choice of going to prison or to be on probation and do drug court. Drug court's a very intensive, I would call it like a very intensive, highly accountable version of probation. I mean, with a lot of people involved, it's like you have a bunch of probation officers. Would that be an accurate?
Yeah.
Plus you go regularly before a judge, which is that's pretty serious business.
They got to show up weekly.
Yeah, and I think 16 months was about the minimum if everything goes well for somebody to graduate that program. You know, if things go pretty well, 16 months is pretty is
how many graduates have we had in that program? Yeah, you know,
I think about four or five.
No, it's up in the, I think it's about 10 now.
That's good. Okay, that's good. That's
one more thing than also with that, they can have random checks in the middle of the night. They'll show up at these folks' homes and check on them. So it's not scheduled.
Yeah.
2 o'clock in the morning, they can show up at somebody's home and check everything.
Yeah. So it's like very heavy duty probation. It's not easy for these folks to get through. But it's kind of, if you've ever gone to a drug court graduation, it's a pretty moving thing to see. But for as far as the jail is concerned, there's a couple of challenges. On the good side, it's a long-term reduction of recidivism, so that's good for county jails. But the challenges are that it's a small capacity, so the drug court, our county drug court, can handle at most, I'd say, 20 clients. I think they're, but
I'd say probably even high.
Yeah, so I think they're in the teens. They're right, you know, it probably hovers around 16, 17 clients. And then as part of SB 70, they sometimes use the county jail for probation sanctions. And so that's a little bit of an impact on, I don't know, you'd be able to speak better to that, Sheriff, on how much of an impact that is when they do sanctions for, you know, these kind of violations. But
it's not, you don't see them that often in our city. Yeah. We'll do a sanction, and it might be for a couple of days or something like that. But
yeah,
now,
yeah.
24/7 is a sanction. On that.
Yeah. Okay. Because I think the bigger impact from SB 70 is just the sentencing guidelines, from what I understand. I mean, if I understand things right, that impacts jails more.
George can probably speak better on some of the sentencing than yeah. 70.
So, but.
Well, there's jail time in the prison.
Yeah. So essentially, that's the big thing with, which is separate from the drug court issue. The drug court's a component of SB 70, but. Anyway, so that is what I was going to, I just wanted, and there's also a vet court. I don't know if either of you want to speak to that at all, but that's a much smaller program.
A little similar to drug court, same, about 16 months, can be a little bit longer depending on how things are going. We have 3 people on there right now on the vet court.
Right, I preside over the veterans court,
yeah.
And we have 3 participants right now. Yeah. And there's, I can only remember since I took the bench in 2015, sanctioning a participant in the vet court to jail. Usually that's a very, very minor. No.
What type of offenses do you see for vets court? Are they mainly drug offenses?
They're drug offenses. There has to be a substance abuse.
Yeah.
There has to be a counseling situation. It's usually post-traumatic stress. Domestic violence, felonies not involving drug dealing or extreme violence with a weapon, something along those lines, and we'll accept him into our veterans court. And it's about an 18-month program. So far, we've had three graduates.
Okay, so that was probably... If any other questions about the alternative? So I wanted you all to be aware of what's going on, because we got a little bit talking about that last time, and I thought it was useful to know that, yeah, on the one side, we're talking about the facility. That's our job in this committee, but we need to be also aware of the efforts that the county is making, and the community, really. It's not just a county thing. It's a community and a court system thing to try to control that jail population. You know, maybe someday reduce it, but at least control it. Okay. So the next thing on the agenda is number seven. I don't really have a slide for it, but just to quickly update on the city and county cooperation. So Commissioner Hanton and I we've had a few meetings initially about coordination with two of the city councilmen, Councilman Bueller and Danforth, and just trying to talk in terms of what kinds of sites we might cooperate on, and then how that might look, and kind of trying to figure this out. You know, are there things where we can make good use of land mostly in the downtown area? Are there other ways in which we can cooperate through locating things in an optimal way? So that's kind of ongoing right now. We had a meeting on last Friday, and we have another one Thursday. And so we'll keep talking about it, and hopefully we'll have a bit more something meaty to talk about soon. But that's gonna impact to the timeline of how we address the jail, because there might be if we can find a way to work together. And some of this is the initiative of Mayor Karen talking about trying to do what we can to cooperate on facilities. And so, you know. We talked a lot. We've talked about that some in some previous meetings, but essentially that's the update right now. So it's another tricky discussion, particularly, I'd say, because counties and cities have completely different ways of funding infrastructure. So, as you know, we have, counties rely on property tax, cities rely on sales tax for the most part. So, anybody have any questions about it? Maybe I can answer on that one.
I was wondering, Lee. You're talking about this here now, working with the city influence.
Because so working with the city kind of impacts how we address the jail. And this is a slide I've used before, so just I think we just need to touch on this topic a little bit right now.
What is the city saying about selling that property across the road from the courthouse, north of the auditorium? Are they still in line with that, or
I think that's up for discussion. Quite honestly. So I think they're kind of like, yeah, maybe, is kind of the answer. So
that's kind of the impression I got. Because they're looking at wanting to build a new city hall.
Right.
And so they're thinking that might be a good place for it.
So you've heard similar things. Yeah. So I think that's a possibility.
Where is that at, Hal?
Just where we were going to build the jail.
So city auditorium.
So trying to figure out, like, okay, if they do that, then what do we, you know, does the jail go there still? And then we just kind of figure out kind of a campus solution. So all those things we're trying to talk about. This is just my personal view. If it goes far enough, it might make sense to ask an architect to help us kind of master plan it. Very basically, like, you know, build, when it comes time to build that building, put that one here. Comes time to build that building, put that one here. But we're not at that point yet. So, and that, because we have to have that discussion, there's probably an impact on how when we time to vote. So, you've seen this slide before. The only addition is it has that now dotted line in there. And let me, if you're not familiar with this kind of a chart, these are months. So this is January. That's December of this year. So we have the general election in November 18. What I'm hearing in general, what I've heard from this committee is that we probably don't need to be considering going to the vote in November 2018. So at the same time, we do need to be having these kinds of discussions. And so right now, we're kind of in the midst of this. So, and that's Commissioner Hanton and I are working with that one. Let's see, what else can, you know, we're continuing to work alternatives, and eventually, depending on this, you know, there might be a need to adjust some of the concept, particularly location. And then, as always, all these things about cost-benefit, you know, the public attitude, location. If we did want to go to a vote in November, so we'd really, the drop-dead time was really probably even in June. But I don't, you know, so we're not in a huge rush, but we don't want to be, we still want to be doing all this stuff, whether, no matter when we go to the vote. It's just some of these things like this would be, we wouldn't have to do the public awareness campaign if we didn't.
And maybe this is obviously premature, but I'm adamantly opposed to any vote this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Commissioner. And you're a commissioner
too.
Yeah.
So I'm not asking for a decision, but I'm just saying that this is kind of the thing.
Well, I almost feel like we should go on the record because we continue to revisit this.
Exactly.
And I think we need to just put it out there that this is what it is.
Yeah. Well, so I think we can put that in the minutes that the general consensus right now is not to. Yeah, but it's not an action item, I don't think.
Time's right.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought of is that with another November election with about 10 ballot measures on it, initiated measures on it, having another thing on there, another question, is just going to be, you know, it gets to be onerous when you have to go through a ballot like that. And so that's another reason to put in your pocket. So.
Yeah, looking at the timing, I just don't think the timing is right.
Talking okay.
To farmers and the ag economy.
Okay.
It's not the right time.
Okay. All right. Well, that's, I think if you put some, you know, something in the minutes about the sentiment, and I think we didn't really have it as an action item, but the only thing we need to take action on is if we wanted to recommend to go to a vote, then I don't think, otherwise I don't think we need to take action on it. So with that, let's see. That's kind of covers 7 and 8 on the agenda. So one was city county cooperation, and then just the process to address GL space. So, you know, we'll keep on working the city county cooperation. We'll keep on working the you know, the alternatives. That city county cooperation kind of is the pivot point, I think, for most of this right now. So, which is the top of the list. Let's see. You've seen a slide similar to that before. This is just one thing to keep in mind. I just think this is good to know. So we talked about last time, this is the line for the sheriff's office. And this is just to, so we have in mind as we look, so this is the vote we had in June, okay, with all the pieces, bits and bobs. And so the bond was just under $19 million. Since we're doing the courthouse remodeling and we would not be doing the existing jail remodel, that would reduce the overall cost. However, in the meantime, inflation causes prices to go up over time. So these are rough, so you don't know. This is a 5%, just 5%, 5%, 5% based on each year, even though it would vary a little bit because depending on the month and when you're able to go to bids and all that stuff. But just so we have, you know, we just have this information in our heads that the longer you wait, the more it goes up. I'm not sure to be, I'm going to show another slide about that. I just want to be, just so we know, this is, the sheriff and I talked a little bit about this slide. This is a bit of my research. This is the national average of corn prices. Okay, and to show, it's kind of like the stock market, but it's probably more volatile, but it goes up over time. And then just to keep, and these are those bond amounts. That I just showed on the previous slide, so spread out over 20 years. So you can see these are the, so you, it'd be, you know, somewhere a little over $1 million in each case per year would be that bond payment. But that's just so we have that in mind. So not trying to, just trying to give more information. So just to be aware. So anybody have any comments? It kind of fits, in some ways it fits with what you guys have been saying, that you have this volatility here that makes people understandably nervous. And then at the same time, you know, to balance the timing to do it as soon as possible, but, you know, within reason.
Well, and if we end up partnering with the city on a project, that cost would be reduced.
Hopefully. Yeah, so it just depends on the specifics, but in general,
there's too many unknowns at this point to push it any farther. Continue to do our research, but we just need to stay neutral for now.
Continue looking at alternatives and seeing what's out there.
Yeah. No, I think with this courtroom and the jail remodification, I mean, that's the idea is to reduce the jail load.
Yeah, yeah, hopefully.
I think we need to evaluate how productive this remodel is going to be before we build a new facility.
Okay.
And give it some time to work.
Right.
Work through the system. We know it's not going to be an immediate fix either.
Okay. All right. So did you guys want to heard some sidebar?
They just said they missed a boat 2 years ago and they built the station.
Oh. Okay. No, okay. All right.
2 years ago and what?
When they built the downtown police station. Oh.
Well, okay. That's another topic, so let's have,
see, we can smile about that.
Okay. So we learn to get along and play well together.
Yeah, so and that's what we're working on. Okay, so.
That's right.
So, with that's basically it for. That's basically it for the juicy agenda items. So, anybody want to say anything else about jails and timing and bonds and stuff? Okay, so that's as much information as I have. I just wanted you guys to have it. It'll be on the slides attached to the minutes. Next future CCJAC meetings. Tuesdays and Thursdays seem to be the good days. I don't think we need to. I was thinking late March, early April would be the next meeting. Was that too soon or too late or? How about, would March 27th work for folks?
Works for me.
That's not too far in the distance. I think given the fact that we're kind of slowing down on the jail discussion, the remodel's underway, you know, and you guys have the schedule of the remodel meetings. If you want to join one and see what one is like, those are the worker bee meetings with the architect. You can do that. So let's, so 27th, March 27th? Okay. And you want to, so, write that down.
That's a cube pen. It's a space pen.
Works in zero gravity. Okay. And then,
why doesn't that surprise me?
And then April, I'm thinking, probably the next one would be late April. Well, you want to just put on the calendar April 19th? Would that work? April 19th?
Okay. Planning
you have what?
Planning commission. But otherwise, I'll be here when it's done.
Okay. Well, let's tentatively say April 19th, which is a Thursday. Okay. Any other?
And you said March 27th?
March 27th, Tuesday. Okay. Anything else for the that anybody wants to say?
Can I make just a suggestion on the minutes here, like their acronyms? Can you spell them out instead of just abbreviate?
Which ones? Oh, that was my fault. Sorry. Okay. I will translate that into. Okay, yeah. That's my fault. I thought about that when I was looking at it. I should have said. So RAI is a risk assessment instrument. That's the thing. That's like the questionnaire. I learned that. I had to learn all this stuff. A CSO is a probation officer, a court service officer. And a SIM is the strategic intercept map. So it's how somebody moves through the criminal justice process. So.
Common person.
Yeah, you're right. No, you're absolutely right. I'll put that on this.
That's why we said to our father first.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. all right. So with that, I would.
Not funny. It's the truth.
I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
So moved by Mr. Van Dusen and seconded by Mr. Drummond. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no.
There was no discussion.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks. We're adjourned. Thanks.